Welcome back, everybody, to the Precision Unloaded podcast. You're once again joined by Graham and Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Graham. What episode are we up to?
Or possibly 85?
So we're going to reach 100 this year.
We should do. Oh my God. This is 85, yes.
We'll have to have like a rap party.
A rap party?
Yeah, you know, like to wrap up production.
Should we just can it at 100?
Yeah, we're going to have an exit strategy and get out at 100.
Well, I've got to renew the subscription in like a month. So if we do 15 more, then we don't have to renew it to the Podbean app. Yeah, it'll save us a few hundred dollars.
Oh, well.
Well,
it's only money. It's only money.
Yes, it's only a few bricks of ammo. Tonight we're going to talk about, we kicked off the 2024 Spark 22 series recently at the PTN Practical, supported by Carlos Sports Shooting. So we're going to talk over setting up the match, shooting the match, several other points about that. We might as well kick straight into it. Mark.
Yeah, so obviously it's the first round of the Spark series, so which is pretty much organized, run, and incubated by yourself and Simon from GPRE. Would that be correct?
Yeah, with help from others, but yes.
With help from others. Yep. Oh, yeah, obviously we can always acknowledge the helpers. So, I mean, getting ready for this season, what sort of preparation did you do? What sort of, you know, systems, procedures, potential changes were mooted?
Not a lot in the way of changes to how the series operates. Ran pretty good last year. We do have a few more events coming in this year, which we'll probably touch on at the end of this podcast.
Yeah.
To be honest, I could probably give a really rough plan out of the whole season, how many matches there's going to be and everything. But yeah, so as for prep, I made a bunch more targets that were less easy to break, essentially. So targets, I'm quite a fan of targets on single, what we call single hangers at the moment. So I've made another sort of dozen of those, and I've got some more steel on order to make more. And then also you have several more sort of little racks and stuff like that you just sort of poke in the ground, off you go, and you know, aiming to worry about replacing straps and bolts and stuff. So that's what's initially been happening in the background.
Yeah, those monolithic frames, so the two-legged frames with a spinning target on that. And now you go on to that single hanger jobby with a little dog leg in it to hold the target on. Is that it?
Yeah, we're still using the spinning type arrangement. It's the ones that hang on fire hose that I'm slowly sort of phasing out.
Yeah. So the single ones are basically just a peg in the ground with a dog leggy thing hanging off with the target off it.
Yeah. And the advantage being, depending where we're setting the event, if the grass is long, they're a bit taller and they're a bit easier to get out of the way. We don't have trim grass around them, stuff like that.
Just harder to see, that's all.
Can be.
For blind people like myself.
For blind people. It depends. If it's a numbered stage, it's all right. If you've got numbers on targets. Yeah. So that'd be sort of any season prep when it comes to the series itself. And then as for actual shooting prep, I have done none. Well, I think me and you, Simon and myself did a session a month ago for about 4 or 5 hours on 22s. But I've done very little 22 shooting. So what about you? Season prep, Mark. I know you're a big. You practice. You put in the work. You lay it all out. You get ready. How much prep?
That's a big no.
No, none.
This year is the first time I've actually done some practice, proper practice. Well, you know, not just seeing if it's shooting straight type of stuff. So actually, yeah. So it's been good. So I've picked up a few tips and obviously didn't pick up any performance out of it, but. At least I'm feeling better that, you know, I might have a chance in, you know, my normal 4-year cycle of peak and trough.
Yeah.
So, no, yeah, basically been testing out the 10-22 still and giving that it was shooting quite well. We did our practice session and also just bedding in the new rifle, which, you know, its only issue is it doesn't mag dump well, but... We'll work on that.
Yeah.
So probably just working on reading the wind with the 22, getting back into that. It's a bit of a change. So just doing measuring and shooting at targets and working out how good or bad my calls are for wind. So that's been quite good, because it's probably the one variable that, prior to a stage anyway, getting that really sorted in your mind is going to be crucial, obviously.
I would say I have, this is kind of on top of it, I have more trouble with 22s wind-wise than centerfires out to distance.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, you get your 6.5 and it's like a 10-mile an hour, 500 meters, you just use gun number. You know, it's pretty straightforward. Hold 0.5, boom, hit. But with 22s, it's a bit more of a game playing around in. And obviously, sometimes you guess or you measure or whatever, and then it goes four times further to the left than you thought it would, and if you see it. So it can be.
No, it's been, because inadvertently there's a big target at about 180 metres where I'm practising, and it's an older steel one, you know, that we've been, and it's painted. And with the S5 Zeiss scope, I can actually see the hits on it really easily. So it's actually interesting shooting at it. Just, you know, steadily shooting away at it and watching the wind and seeing what it's doing to work out, you know, and it's just giving you a bit of real-time feedback onto how much difference it does make. So you're actually then seeing, you know, helping you try and work out reading the wind, if it's gusting, how long it takes to affect the target over there, sort of thing. So,
are you telling me the S5, the Zeiss S5 is better than your SIG BDX when it comes to...
Yeah, I mean... It's a recent BDX, which is way better than the original Generation 1 ones, but then, it looks like looking down a toilet roll compared to the Zeiss. So.
They're not even in the same class.
They're still good, but, I mean, yeah, the Zeiss is shot glass, and it's a different class, you know, it's another class, isn't it? So,
if Tony Gillihan is listening from Australia, our YouTube superstar friend, which he probably might be, he'll be loving this, because when he borrowed one of your rifles at the end, he, thanks a lot, Mark, but God, I hate your scope. That's sick. He
hated the electronics, not necessarily the,
I think he hated everything, he told me. anyway. Oh, it's funny.
Never borrow gear. There you go.
No, you just end up disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, righto. Season prep. That's sort of, what else? Yeah, just been, getting better with the tripod, but the trouble is it's so seldom used, it's annoying me. So,
are you going to stop carrying it?
No, I'll carry it, because I didn't use it at Pew Pew.
Yeah, there's two stages you could have used it at Pew Pew.
No, I did, and it worked well. So I've actually got it working well by clamping it in and, you know, using the adjustment trigger and stuff. It works well, especially if the rifle's light enough, which is what the 10/22 is, pretty light gun, so it's easy to manipulate on the trigger stick clamped in, so works well. All right, Graham, event planning. So what went into setting up this event?
Well, I don't like running the same match every year. Obviously, you're sort of limited by where you shoot from to a certain extent, but trying to mix up how you shoot the stages or what targets are there, stuff like that. So I, as I sort of mentioned earlier, I made a bunch of different targets, some of them. I made some vertical and horizontal targets, so, you know, a tall, skinny one, and then in a vertical sense, and then the same thing turned on its side, a few things like that. There's a couple fixed props at the Pew Pew venue, so, again, it's hard to change the prop, but it's so we can mix up the targets or how they're shot. So, yeah, a few new targets. The triangles that we introduced last year at Barren Earth, and then the final, they turned up. We did a troop line out of triangles. That was, I'd actually say it was an easier stage than last year. The targets just took a little bit more care, but they were ultimately shorter distances. Yeah, so we went through and just sort of rejigged each stage, mixed up the positions, a few longer targets added in, just sort of minor changes to keep it fresh, so you're not going back and shooting like a skill stage. You know, it's the same thing over and over and over again. You want to sort of, I like the idea of it being a bit new and a bit of a challenge. And yeah, so. And a couple longer targets, which was good because the wind was nice and calm again for the third time in a year, for the third year in a row. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about the setup? So what's involved with that?
So it's the venue's a couple hours north from where I live, about an hour north of you. So it's a little bit more work getting up there. I went up the weekend before. So when it comes to setting up, I plan a lot of it here at home. So I've planned what targets are going to be where. And then what I did to try and make things more efficient, you know what it's like, Mark, when we set up an event, we have like a trailer full of shit or a tray of a ute. And you're like, oh, we need that target. And it's buried under hundreds of kilos of other steel and spades and chainsaws and stuff. So each stage, I bundled together the targets and frames. So stage one, stage two, right the way through. So when we went to each position, we just grabbed off a pre-assembled bundle with all the appropriate targets. So that made setup a lot simpler, especially because you got less time. You know, you're trying to minimize your trips to the venue. It's not like I'm just whipping up to your place every other day. It's a bit further. So yeah, so setting up like that and then just, yeah, that was the main change to setting up, was just trying to make things a little bit more efficient. So we did that most, probably 95% of the work the weekend before, and then the Friday before we drove back up and did a couple things, just a couple things we forgot, or we wanted to change a target size or something like that. And I set the blind stage, which we'll touch on later. Yeah, so just I put a lot more effort into setup being more efficient, which just made the whole thing a lot less stressful. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's yeah, I don't know. It's real easy to, you think, oh yes, that won't take us long to do, and then 2 hours are gone, 4 hours are gone, and you remember the early events we did. You'd have about seven guys who go flat out all day trying to set up an event, running back, ranging targets. It's, oh, we need to move it. You race back over there and move it. It's just trying to get away from those days. Yeah.
Just a lot of driving back and forth.
Yeah, and opening gates. And yeah, rimfire's not so bad. The distances are short, but like center fire, you know what it's like? Like, oh, the 1,000-meter targets need to move. It's like, oh, shit, you got
to move. I can't even see it.
Yeah, exactly.
From the position. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. So it's just getting better at that stuff. Yeah.
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 No, it's good. It certainly shows in the layout and everything. And yeah. There's some familiarity, but also there's some change, which is good.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And so then, you obviously, a few people headed up there on the night before.
Yeah.
You go head out for a bit of dinner at the local night spot.
Yeah. So Wes, whose property it is, who's been match director the last 2 years, and he asked if he could forego that job, and I took it over. But yeah, he booked us in a.
So his sacking wasn't. That no, was a false.
He sacked.
News.
He sacked himself. He resigned. Yeah. which is fine.
Well, stood down.
And
because he wanted to shoot it, obviously.
Yeah, he hasn't got to shoot it right, which is fine.
Yeah.
And so there's plenty of rounds this year, so it gives me a chance. In previous years, there wasn't as many rounds, so we needed to share the match directing around a bit more. So we all got a chance to do our two point scoring rounds, but it's not that big a deal now. So anyway, he booked us in a table at the Night Owl, and Pew, about 10 or 12 of us went down. So the guys who helped me set up, I booked a couple rooms, I should say, at the same establishment. And yeah, we stayed there, so it was quite handy. We went out for dinner, and a bunch of other guys who were rolling in for the event. It was quite good. It's quite a social night, which is fun. Becoming more of a fan of that since our trips to Australia last year and or the long ways challenge when you organise dinner, you know, like it's good. It's good getting out and talking a bit of rubbish and, you know, having a few drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so you didn't come up because you're only an hour's drive, right? So there's not a lot of point in you staying the night in Pew Pew.
That's 60 odd Ks. It's just like driving to New Plymouth. So. All right, Graham. So what were the main changes from the match from last year?
Like I said, just trying to freshen things up. We did essentially a full tripod stage for rifleman class. It didn't say you had to use a tripod. There's some close targets, like a 10 meter and a 20 meter.
And you supplied a tripod, didn't you?
So one of the
on the stage, I mean.
Yeah, one of the issues with having tripods compulsory is it just adds in a big cost to competitors, and or you might like get unlucky and your squad has no tripod to share, you know, between you. So if I'm going to set a stage where it's sort of is designed around tripod use, the idea is we leave one there, like a good one, not a junky one, like a nice one with a tack table, and it's also pick and arca capable clipping. So whatever they want to use, bag, pick or arca, It's there, it's ready to go. And yeah, so you could have shot the stage unsupported, but I wouldn't. I wouldn't have. It would have been hard, very hard. But yeah, so I added. So the stage was similar to last year, except the targets were smaller at the start. So the close ones, and then a little bit bigger at the longer distances. And it was essentially no prone. So sitting or kneeling tripod or standing tripod, whatever. And you also had to move maybe 15 meters sort of down the track. Yeah, so just I call it like a freshening up of stages rather than any major differences. Yeah, so not massive.
So what went well and what didn't go so well? Stages, yeah, tough question, Graham.
No, it's a good one. So I come out and say the only real issue I had, there's a few small admin issues in my stage instructions, which was fixed straight away.
It's standard.
Stage two, one of the positions is too tall. And I test shot the course the previous weekend, and I'm 6 foot one, just over 6 foot one. So it's really easy to forget that that's above average height. So one position, which is really, really simple for me, when you get down to, say, your height, which is like 5 foot two or something, I don't know, it can become a bit difficult. So that was the only real stage issue we had. Yeah. And because the target was downhill, so you kind of made it even more awkward. But we had no target failures, which is nice. Even with rimfire, it can still happen. So I'm on a good streak for no target failures across the events for the last fair while now.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, the new single hangers took a little bit of tuning. So this, we got past that.
We'd never single cease fire.
Nope. And
that's good. It's good.
Yeah, it's taken.
You don't notice when everything goes well.
It's but again, like, we've never had major ones, but like what we've seen overseas can really like slow a day down and ruin everyone's sort of flow. And so, yeah, so again, that was a bit of work in the background with a few different target designs and stuff like that. It's nothing crazy. It's just mucking around. And
so how are we going to sort out this vertically challenged issue?
I'm going to chop about 6 inches off that post.
Yeah, but there's a couple of events that's happened at, so yeah, we need a short tester.
But you're a competitor, so it's hard to get you to test.
No, that's what I mean, yeah. So we have to employ some sort of dwarf or midget.
I did think if we made we could leave those things, right? Like when the NRL pyramid or the steel tree that's up on your range, what I normally do, because it's a high position, I'll just say use... So let's say there's five positions. I'll say use four of the five positions.
Yeah, choose. Yeah, yeah. You got choice. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're short, so you'll use the bottom one. And I'm tall, so I'll use the top one. Like it's.
Yeah.
And it's up to you. Or I'm tall. I could still use the bottom one. So
I can stand for all five. Yeah.
But when it comes to the posts, which is just four posts arranged at different heights, you don't really get that option. So I see overseas in the US and such, they have like a box. Like a nice stable box that sits on the ground below it. You know, that's maybe 200 millimeters tall or something. It's meshed, so it's not slippery, and it's obviously not wobbly. So we could also have that. So then you can keep the nice tall post, and you can just plonk a little step there.
So sort of a Tom Cruise photo opportunity box.
Yes, it would be good for Tom. Oh, for Tom Cruise. Yeah, yes. But yeah. So that's the real issue was that tall post. But
can you stand on another competitor?
What I ended up doing, because we had a junior shooter and a couple ladies competing, I just let them shoot off the side of it. No, I sorry, the junior, I let he just reshot a short post because he had a lot of leniency on how he shot course of fire because he's like 14, right? So yeah, so that was the main little thing we had to deal with.
Did you go? Oh, Mark's already shot it now, so we can change it.
Just trim it, Mark's already. I was trim it now.
Because I was pretty awkward. I was like, I think I had some horrendous looking down my scope, sort of cock-eyed. It was quite weird, but I think I didn't do too bad. But yeah,
because they weren't small targets, but they weren't big targets. Like the long target was pretty big, but the 100 or the 90 meter one and the 140 or whatever it is, they aren't They're not, again, you need to break a clean shot. So I did put a small handicap on some shooters.
It was only the downhill part that made a problem. So, I mean, the fact that you're steep downhill, so you had to be over top of the, right.
Yeah.
Should have been taller.
You should. Hey, I've seen a photo of you. You look taller than Jeff in it too.
Yeah, it's true. That's my LDV contract.
So here's a question for you, Mark.
Yeah.
We've sort of talked about how the event gets set up and run and blah, blah, blah. All the boring stuff. You mentioned you ran the 1022, and then you mentioned there's another gun with a Zeiss S5. Why did you run the 1022, the 1022 target, over the Victrix smallbore?
I was sort of just tailing in from last year, so I'd changed the scope over on the 1022 to a better BDX, if there's such a thing. So an EZ6, which has got Christmas tree reticle, so you can actually use that.
You've actually got wind holds now. Oh, okay, yeah. That's a game changer.
Oh, it is.
It's a game changer.
Finally, I can bother thinking about wind. So I thought I'd kick running that, but the other flip side was I only had one mag for the other gun, so I hadn't got round to remortgaging my house to buy another magazine for the other gun.
How much was the new mag?
Oh, retail, Graham, the $250. So I didn't pay that, but yeah, it's not great. Then again, I mean, Teak has been like that for ages with CTR mags and that, haven't they? So
yeah,
it's not uncommon. Proprietary mags are never cheap, are they?
No. Well, you got it now. You got a second one now, so.
Yeah. So I'm away laughing. Just be sad to see the ease of use of the semi-automatic diminishing.
Well, there is a couple events that are, you'd be mad not to run the 1022. So,
yeah,
and you'll turn up with the Victrix at speed versus precision.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, after actually doing some proper training with it, I can see I can see why people are winning with the bolt action. So,
would you say? The Victrix would have been an advantage on the day at Pew Pew.
Yeah, absolutely, because there was no unlimited rounds, and most of them were 12, 14 or rounds. So, and time pressure wasn't big, I didn't think. It wasn't short times.
No, I intentionally ran longer times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I would have done better with the maybe. That's the issue, is that maybe there's a bit of fear involved, Graham, of rolling out a new gun and getting no improvement in performance. But like a Labor government spending shitloads of money and nothing happens. Just the same old shit.
You are the Labor government of shooting.
That's it, pretty much. Huge announcement.
Let's do this.
Money spent, yeah. And, oh, no, still 10th position. There you go.
Yeah.
Well. So watch this space at Jeff's match, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see if it actually, because all I've been doing is sliding down the results since about 18 months ago.
Well, you're overdue for a 22 win, aren't you? You've never had it.
I don't think I've ever had one, have I?
I think you had a third in Hunter class
I had a third at Rotorua, a third at Jeff's match, I think.
Frickin' elf, look at you. You're a machine.
I think it was like you and Wilkie and then me, I think, but I was like.
That's right.
I was about a stage behind in terms of points.
That was that.
I've got a medal. Might have been the first.
Yeah, I've got a medal for it somewhere. Yeah, Steel Storm. Look, I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
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 Oh, look at you. So you actually have a Spark medal.
I do.
Oof. Look at you. Okay. So on the day, how do you think you shot? Did it go well?
Well, as the great and powerful great shooters say, focus on how you shot on the day and how you felt about it. I felt okay. I think in my squad, I was the top shooter, and that's normally a problem for me. Because I need someone doing a lot better than me to give me a yardstick for how I'm going, if you know what I mean.
Oh, you want someone to set an example?
Yeah.
You don't want to be the school principal. You want to be the substitute teacher.
No, I just noticed if there's someone significantly better than me, I probably do shoot better.
Okay.
Maybe decision making's improved because you're actually not doing dumb shit. Although I don't think I really did anything. Yeah, good squad of people. I mean, good guys. I don't think I made many crap decisions, so I didn't have any problems really with wrong targets or anything, or the data was pretty straightforward because it's just loaded into your phone and the dots appear and away you go. So, yeah. So I think I ended up, 12th equal, I think. So yeah, just middle of the pack. Another B-grade performance.
Were you B-grade, were you?
No, I'm just saying, just a B-grade performance. In general. You know, just life in general. B-grade. The blind stage did well. I think that was our first stage. We started at one, did we?
Yeah, you did well on the blind stage.
Was it stage 8?
It was 8, yes.
Yeah, so we went straight to, one from there. So it was good. I was amazed because normally I can't see crap on a blind stage. And I was like, oh, there's one. I think I got all the close ones and two of the medium ones. Because it was one shot, one point, one shot at each target, I thought there's got to be more than, I thought there might be 7 or 8, but there was actually 10, I think. So, but I was, I think I ended up getting 6, I think. So
that's pretty smart because if you look at the scoring, and this confuses competitors from overseas, but we don't run 1.1 hit. There's a bunch of reasons for that, but anyway, it doesn't actually matter. We run about 24 to 30 points in a stage. So we don't want to go like, we've been to a match once where like most stages were 30 points, then one was 60. So it can really unbalance things if it's too far tilted. So yeah, if you look at how many targets, and it's only one hit per target, you could probably work out there's going to be about 8 or 10 targets.
Yeah,
that was smart thinking on your part. I tried to talk to a lot of people about the blind stage as I come off because I was curious, and a lot of people, there's a few who got 6, and they were going, "Yeah, no, I that was it. I found them all, didn't I?" And I said, "Well, no, you didn't. you only got just over half. But anyway, it doesn't matter."
Yeah, not because I do. I think it's probably the best blind stage in a 22 match I've done. So mainly because I felt it was achievable. So people were getting 2 or 3 at least. Right, whereas it's a bit of a problem when you get no one up near 50% type of thing.
So blind. I was nervous about. So I haven't done a blind stage me personally in an event I've set up since the last Tikarangi 22, which was that? That was 2021, 22?
Yeah.
It was the first Spark season. And that was a simple blind stage. All you essentially had to do in that blind stage was move all the way left and all the way right in the shooter box, and you would see all the targets. Surprisingly, a lot of people still didn't do it, but that was the gist of it, right? It was still good. They were tricky, but anyway. Fast forward, Simon's done a bunch of good ones, but one in particular that always gets brought up at the final, that was hard, right? And it sort of soured a lot of people's
opinion. It becomes infamous and a great talking point.
Yeah, and so
It was a four-minute break standing there gazing out into the forest.
I remember I shot it and I found one target and hit it twice, And the RO goes to me, "You've actually done really well."
Well done, Graham. So what?
Yeah, I was like, what are you on about? But anyway, so fast forward to now, I've avoided them. And what we should say about blind stages, you need a certain area to do them that people can't see, obviously. You need somewhere for the competitors to wait, somewhere for the people who have shot or ready to wait. And you also need an extra dedicated RO, which isn't always the easiest to get, so.
It's a time dragging stage, isn't it?
Yes, and then, and so they are a choke point in the event. So, with the position that we run the one in at Wes's up at Pew Pew there, we talked about it like, shit, this would actually make a pretty good blind stage. And last year, I just didn't have the spare arrows, so couldn't do it. It was shot in the same area, but it was a stage where you had a knowledge of target locations, a standard kind of stage. This year, we had the volunteers to make it happen, but I was nervous about trying to find that balance. Okay, you go all the way back to the Tikarangi 22 in the first year of Spark.
Yeah.
Probably a bit easy. And then you go to that same year, the final, the event final, it was too hard. And so I was trying to find an area in the middle. But the trouble is, when you put out hidden targets, because everyone else who helps with the event, they're shooting, so they can't come over and help. Okay, so I can't get them to check what I've done, you know.
Yeah.
The land where Sue's property is, he's shooting as well, so he can't check it. So I've got to put these targets out. I will say, obviously, the RO got to look at them, but he didn't arrive till the Saturday morning, and he's from out of town. So you put them down, and you come back into the position. You're like, all right, there it is. But your eye knows where it is, so it picks up on it straight away. Oh, I can see the frame, or I can see this. And so it's a bit of a game of setting it. And so I set it, and I test shot it by myself. I played the game like I didn't know what I was doing. I actually only found eight.
You bash yourself over the head and give yourself amnesia for half an hour.
I only found eight of the targets when I test shot it. And I was
wow,
like,
I've done a good job there.
Yeah. I was like, oh, fuck. So I went home, and I was thinking about it a bunch, and I thought, okay, I'll take back some grey spray paint. So for those of you who know what zinc it is, it's a spray paint that you spray on welds and stuff, and it dries to a light grey. So I got my hands on a can of that, and thinking the light grey will contrast against the green a bit better and make them a little bit easier to see. And so I went back, and so I painted them. It was easier to see, but again, I'm looking at something, I know where it is. And
But also it means it's easy to see throughout the day. So certain times of the day, some blind stages are easy because of this weather, the direction of the sun. So I felt, because I went back and looked later, it still looked the same, so it probably made it an evener stage in terms of time of day.
But yes, and also when I originally set it, I set them with somewhat camouflage colours. They were sort of speckled with a bit of green and black and such. Once they get shot up, they're going to go grey. So by going to the grey, gave everyone a bit of a similar type colour. So what I did is I marked all the positions of the targets. This is outside of the event, with a marker peg. So when I brought the RO down at about, I don't know, 8 a.m. on the Saturday morning of the event, it was really easy to point them out to him, right? Because it was easy to lose a couple of them. And he familiarized himself. He made himself a bit of a map. And then we pulled the pegs out. But again, I think worrying about it was good and bad, because I was worried it was going to be too hard. But it worked out pretty well, and I think that little bit extra of looking into it, it seemed to come out. I don't like the word fear, but it's either we had a couple people get like only find two, but then the average was like 4 to 5, so about half.
Yeah, which is good. I think that one of the keys is probably not having too longer. You know, what's the pegs you will go between.
A firing line.
If you don't, because people can get stuck in a position where they see nothing to a degree, whereas if you have a bit shorter, the chance of getting into the wrong position to see bugger all is lower, I suppose.
I think there was only a couple of targets that you could see from more than like a meter or two of the firing line. So you had to, if there's a long firing line, it's there for a reason, and you want to make sure you do drift along. And use the whole thing, because
you want to avoid basically where you got to walk two steps to the left, squat down to about 1.4 meters high, gaze off to.
That's silly. But like even like if you went to the far right, a position you love, Mark, there was two easy ones right there.
Yeah.
You know, so if you use the area, you'll get what we call the gimmies, right? Surprisingly, yeah. I put a rabbit up. There's a rabbit. So what I should say for those who went there.
There was a rabbit? People in my school said that. I was like, what? It stood out.
Anyway. Yeah, I thought it was easy. But I think most of the targets were within like 20 meters. And then there was one at maybe like 40. You were sort of hemmed in by the foliage in the trees where we were. So it's not as if you're looking over a big valley, right? And you had left and right maximum. There's nothing past here. There's nothing past here. Essentially, all the targets point and shoot too. You don't have to worry about doing dope and stuff. Now, they went into it with not a lot of information, but there was also a tripod and a pair of binoculars left on the stage just in case people didn't have them. Obviously, hunter class don't use the tripod. They just shoot however they want. I think you walked out of it with six, which was what we would call probably a high score. for the day. I think two.
And I didn't even use binos, so I don't know what happened there.
I managed to watch a couple shooters, and Simon and Wes, they both spotted with their rangefinder because it's on a lanyard around their neck and they can hold it up real quick and easy. I'm not sure if it was good. I don't know, but that's how they were scanning. You just use your eagle eyes.
No, I just I'm not gonna. Well, you're talking about a monocular, nah.
So yeah, the shitty old likers we've got.
No, it just doesn't. You can't see that much better.
So the rabbit.
Just use binos.
Yeah, the rabbit. Right. Okay. So on the left hand side, there's a sort of a reasonable size hole through the bushes, looking down onto the track. So
yeah,
on one of my big tall single hangers, I hung a rabbit silhouette. Like it's a full size.
I know. When I saw it, I thought, that's got to be a mistake.
Yeah, because that was...
It's just a giant fucking rabbit.
It was like you'd seen a rabbit on the track, right? That was the idea. Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is a gimme. This is easy points for everybody. There was not that many hits on it at the end of the day. Probably like...
No.
Probably like, I don't know, 12 hits. I was like, shit. there should have been 50 hits on this target.
It was literally too obvious. Yeah. Doxically.
But again, you couldn't see it from the whole firing line. You had to be down that left side.
Yeah.
And maybe they were just looking too low. But yeah, I thought, but again, heaps of people, they're going, what are you talking about, a rabbit? And I'm like, there's a rabbit right there.
So any with none on them?
No. Hits? No, according to the RO, he said everything got hit pretty evenly. He said there's a couple that was a bit less, but he said pretty well. He said it worked out pretty evenly. He said, some people would, you know, the one across the track, I'm not sure if you found that one, at about 40 metres. Most, the close ones, if you didn't see them, they were hard to see, if that makes, that sounds dumb. But the long ones, if they got pointed out to you, they were all very obvious. Once you've seen them, you'd go, oh, how did I not find that? Like, it's right there. It's a rectangle surrounded by natural shapes. Like, I should stand out, but... you know what it's like.
I had a bit of time to go, so I think I was almost in the mind that I must have just about found them. But then, as I said, I thought it's only one point, one shot per target, so there's got to be more of them. But I didn't find any more, so I was like,
The idea behind the one shot is, because it's a blind stage, right? And it's like a little sort of semi-hunting-themed stage. You've already shot your rat or your rabbit or whatever your target is, right? So it doesn't need to be shot again. So, and none of the shots aren't hard, really, are they? So,
no,
it's the finding that's where you're making your points, is by finding the targets.
It's a good stage to encourage people that they don't have to do data for short range stuff often, you know.
Oh, so many people do, though. They're like, oh, it's 5.8 mil at 10 meters. I'm like, they're like, what do you do? I'm like, I just point at the top of the target. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I just, is it 10 to 15, I just point at the top of the target.
No, it's just good. It's good practice to do it, to actually train at that, right, those shorter ranges, so you don't have to bother, you know.
I think so, but that's how we think too. Because we do a lot of, you know, possums and goat and deer culling where the shots are a bit quicker and you don't have time for fluffing around. So
yeah,
maybe it's just how we think.
Yeah, possum sitting up a tree is certainly haven't got much time to hit it.
To be honest, if they're that close, I just like hold my barrel against them.
Or use a 44-40.
That has been happening a bit lately. We'll talk about, with next podcast, we'll talk about a bit of hunting. We'll talk about possums, deer, and pigs. Anyway,
the first round of the Possum Rifle Series.
Possum Rifle Series. And we've both been on a couple of deer hunts, so we could probably talk about that. But anyway. But yeah, no, again, I was nervous to bring blind stage back, for me anyway. But I'm happy with the feedback I got. The people who didn't find many seemed not to be grumpy at me, because you can get some negative feedback. They seem more disappointed in their own performance. So, not saying it's good they didn't perform well, but I'm happy they didn't blame me for their lack of success.
Yeah. I think some people have their expectations are that it'll be really hard, and somehow that makes it hard. I don't know. But because that's a good lesson anyway, down the track, is to have, you know, it's quite easy to have findable targets, but still make it challenging enough. So,
Yeah, I think, like you say, if there's 10 targets, three or four are really easy, and then you sort of maybe two or three are intermediate, and then there's a couple that are hard, and that's how you split the field or something. Or you just be like you and just turn up maybe next time with a thermal, $10,000 thermal binocular, and see if the steel...
That would have helped this time.
Do you think the steel would have been a different colour?
No, it was too early in the day, so it would have... It was pre-set up, so it would have been too cold. If it's late in the day, maybe, but then, yeah, it's all depending if it gets light on it to heat it up. So I noticed that at Tirata. I think half the blind stage was in shade and half wasn't when I did it, and so I can only pick up the targets that were in the sunshine.
Oh, you did but it then, at Speed vs Precision last year, didn't you?
I think it was, yeah. It wasn't the final. No, it was, yeah.
I don't think we had a blind stage at the final.
No, probably not.
No, we didn't. No.
No. So, yeah. Right. What are this? Yeah. So, any other stages that I thought would... the trip line was more achievable. I think that's where I did have a... I think I skipped a target, which was a problem. I think a few people did on our squad.
Well, you bring up the troop line, and I'm going to go back to any sort of issues with the match. The first target on the troop line, if you didn't set your bipod up high, it was very easy to skim your bullet on the ground in front of you.
Oh, yeah.
It's an awkward position. I've been hinting at West to just take the tractor through there and alter the track slightly, which I think he might do for us. But that I could have maybe done something there to make that a little bit simpler because, again, I don't like people's gear.
Could you just move to the right?
No, it gets worse.
Oh.
Well, no. If you want that 40-meter target, which I do want.
Yeah. I think if you go to the right, you'll stop. You won't be able to see the stuff that's down to the left. Yeah,
that's essentially the only place you can shoot from is there. I've battled with that for years. Well, last year and this year. That's our third P10. Yeah, so I could improve that slightly with either we dig the track, again, not my property, or I maybe make a little shooting platform or something. So that first target, the triangle target, it was tiny.
Yeah, it was a bit of a problem for a few people that had just like Harris-type shorter ones and... There was no height.
Yeah, I shot it with a Harris, and what I did was I aimed at I could only just see the top point of the triangle.
Yeah.
So I shot the top point of it. So that would be an improvement that could be made here's an easier way that doesn't involve a digger. I make some leg extensions for that target, and I get it a bit higher up. Another, 300 taller or something would probably remedy that issue. But
Simon must have had a very short bipod on that stage.
I don't think he had a zero.
Sorry.
Yeah, but poor bugger, he had a hell of a day. But
no, apologies. Yeah.
Yeah. I think which we've got to fix this coming weekend.
Yeah.
Anyway,
find the
Yeah.
What was happening.
So next
it was
you're right, Karen.
No, I thought last year there might have been more targets, I think, and I think I got lost part of the way through, which happens with the troop lines and me, but this time I had a pretty firm plan. I ditched data until I get further out in terms of holdovers, and I've got 8 dots I can use, so just making sure that I basically have the longer targets on the dots and just use anything out to 80 metres I don't need to worry about.
You imagine how good that Zeiss S5 would have been on the little tiny targets with all the paint blown off.
Yeah, I know. Good point. Yeah, because I've actually been worried, but it's actually quite easy to dial. So, and the other thing is, it's a very good. Well, the reticle I found really good for holding over. So, which is, it's well designed for that, I think. Yeah. You know, just for my mind. So I was actually practicing with that the other day, just doing 100 and 180 meters and just holding all the time,
mm-hmm.
and with the wind as well. So it was, yeah, it's well suited to it. And it's given me the confidence to not have to dial all the time, depending on the stage, but because otherwise it just kills your time.
Yeah. I think I gave a little bit more time on stage one. I did. And a couple less targets, but I think it worked. But I do like triangle targets. I know they're not popular with everybody, but they just sort of mix it up a bit. We stole that from our Canadian friends. They use them quite a bit, and I think they're fun. So expect to see more of them, definitely at the matches I organise.
No, it's like a half-assed windage target, really. It's long and flat-ish.
Well, you always told me, you're like, I don't like diamond targets, Graham. So, yeah, true, so all true. I've done is cut the diamond in half and made it tough to size.
It's fixed it. Yeah. How's that? No.
it's a precision target. Now, if it was windy, that stage would have been like proper windy. It would have been a lot harder.
Yeah.
You still would have got, I think you would have got a few hits still, but that, oh, you can say that with anything, can't you? but yeah, so.
Sort of a match I did probably see for quite clearly that probably don't pay much attention to people spotting, because there was a lot of stuff that was going under that was claimed to be over and vice versa. So
that's also where you're the beautiful glass on your S5 Zeit.
No, that's right. No, but it's the steepness, I think, is the issue partly with people's, yeah, spotting, that it gives a weird perception because you're going past the target. You don't have, yeah.
I still, you know, so a common thing we do, we give distances, right, but they're not TBR. They are line of sight. So
yeah, yeah.
We don't take into consideration the angle, and we've always done that. And then if you want to, you do it yourself. And that's the way it is. What that does is we just know it. When it's one way or the other, we know that's the way it's been done. So.
Yeah,
people go, the distance is wrong. They fucked up the distances. And it's like, no, we have not added an angle and you're measuring in TBR.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's like, yeah, that's up to you. But yeah, anyway.
No, if it is long and steep or whatever, I'll do the calculation for the angle and then I'll just know what the difference is, if you know what I mean. So if I'm not adding it into the data.
If it's a small target, I worry about it. If it's a big target,
yeah.
I don't care.
But I'm saying, I'll say it's only making, it's half an inch, so whatever. There you go, type of thing, to add that to your hold. Or
the worst range, Barren Earth at your place where you murdered all those pigs and goats the other day, that part you really need to pay attention to, it because in rifleman class anyway, because it is, I think your gun stays at, shit, you have to aim like low at the first few targets.
Yeah.
You're dialing way, well, or holding way below your zero. And I think your zero doesn't line back up to 80 meters or something. So anyway, that'll be a topic for another match later on in the year. But pay attention to it at Pew Pew. That's for sure.
Yeah.
The final is at Pew Pew this year. So remember that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Damn, I've lost out again.
You had it the first year.
Oh.
Well, the beauty of Pew Pew, obviously it's a cool spot. It's the where it is seems to attract good numbers of competitors. Like this, we get no one's, well, apart from Wellington and stuff, but everyone seems pretty happy to drive there, whereas we forget in Taranaki that we are out of the way. We're not much of a destination here in New Plymouth. So, but yeah. Anyway, next round is in Port Waikato-ish. In a couple of weeks, what are you planning on doing differently for round two? You're gonna take the Victrix or 1022? Are you gonna do some practice? Are you gonna what's the plan?
Yeah, so this weekend's last chance practice. So I did practice in the middle of the week as well. So I'm actually going to do more. So
cough, Anzac Day.
Mainly because I picked up 2,500 rounds of ammo, so I don't feel like I'm running low. Oh, that's all TAC 22. I wish I could get some special match or something, but anyway. So, yep, got the second mag ready to go, so I'll roll out the Vitrix, I think. So I might take the 1022 just in case the Vitrix breaks down, inverted commas.
Don't, because you'll get there and you'll go, nah, man, fuck it, I'll just use the 1022. And at the end of the day, you'll go, oh, that was a mistake. So,
yeah.
So from what I understand, the next round is going to be prop heavy, solid props, you know, NRL style sort of thing. So, I would run the Victrix and a heavy bag.
Yeah. Yep. I might, like my food ordering, I'll leave it to the last minute.
Take your 1022 with the red dot and magnifier.
Yeah.
Yep. Mark, I got you for a one. Yep, thanks.
Hey, there was a guy last year there shooting with open sights, so I was impressed.
Yeah, he got some hits too, and that was windy, so.
Can be done.
Scotty back in the day ran a one.
So you're shooting in round two, Graham?
Yes.
So what are you doing?
Well, I'm going to do a bit of practice this weekend. I need to build dope. I've got a Bricker special match and a Bricker R50 left.
Oh, gee, thanks.
I'll probably... Well, actually, there's a few missing out of my special match because someone needed some extra for the final. And I'll probably run the special match. To be honest, I've always found that slightly better than the R50. But I'm not going to lose sleep over R50. I'm going to get some real solid dope, and then I'll probably burn a few hundred rounds of TAC-22 in practice.
Yeah.
Once I've got the data all sorted, and then I'll clean and refoul for the match. But I'm not going to practice with the special match for obvious reasons. We're in a bit of a hard to get phase for that match.
Yeah. I went to get some 223 ammo the other day. Yeah, the stuff I use, the
PPU.
PPU match line.
Yeah.
2025, they said.
Well, I imagine most of that, Mark, because it's very similar.
I can imagine where it's going.
Yes, it has been fired at the Eastern that Front.
Way, over there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, you're going to save the special match for the special match.
Yes. I'll be around the Voodoo with the – what's the
– Yeah, what's the – you're still striker? On the Delta?
Yep, Delta Striker. Is it 3.5 to 22? 21? Something?
21, 22.
It's small, but it's a wicked little scope, actually. When I say little, it's just not as big as our big 56mm objective. It's still a 34mm tube.
Yeah.
Yeah, so running that, I don't often go over that up to 30 power or nothing anyway. So, yeah, that seems to be the current setup. I've put it in the...
3.5 to 21, yeah, that's it.
There you go. Thank you for the Google.
No, I just plucked it out of funny.
Yeah, true. I'll put in the Matrix, not the Matrix, sorry, the Masterpiece Arms BA Comp chassis, a little bit of weight in the front because it's got the short barrel, so you need to add weight. And yeah, that's it. So for years now, I've been talking about on again, off again issues with the Voodoo stuck cases. The current theory, after all the theories that people are probably going sick of hearing about, is that was the suppressor, when I was putting the gun vertical, we're having lead dust and carbon crap fall down the barrel into the ultra match tight chamber and then lock the next round. So I'm up to probably 600 rounds fired since the final without a problem. So
you finally come around to my way of thinking, Graham. No suppressor.
Well, yeah, I mean, I sort of thought about it, and then I noticed a build-up of dust in there. I talked to Simon, and he said, you should probably take that suppressor off. So I did it, and it seems to be working. It would be really not. I don't care if I have like...
It's a sound theory.
Yeah, I don't care if I had one jam, but having like 15 like we did in the final. So fingers crossed we can... This is the year we fucking sort it out. Yeah, but other than that, I'm looking forward to...
I'll sprinkle something down the barrel when you're not looking.
I'm looking forward to scoring some series points in the Spark, because currently for Taranaki shooters, you're in second, and I am not even on the leaderboard. So for the there's a sub-Taranaki division inside Spark. We've just never told anyone about it. No. So, yeah, again, this will probably come out next day or two. So if you do want to go to round two of Spark, get in contact with the Gun Rack. We have a loaner rifle program. Thanks to Beretta New Zealand, we've got a really cool Tika in the UPR stock with a Bushnell scope a Burris scope, rather. It's all set up. We give you dope. We give you ammo. You just pay the entry fee. You don't have to pay for ammo. And then after that... If you give me 1 second, I can tell you the rough plan for the season. You heard it here first.
Just rounding out the pew pew round. So thanks to Carlos for their sponsorship as well, and the Gun Rack as well, and LDV.
Yes. So thanks LDV for being the official sponsor of the podcast. I mean, the Gun Rack for being official. Yeah. Wait.
It's confusing now.
All right, so I'm going to go real quick through the season. This will be the first time we've publicly sort of talked about it. Some of the rounds, the exact date is penciled in but not finalised, so subject to some change. So we've done Pew Pew, and then we've got 27th April, we've got Steel Storm in Port Waikato area. 25th of May is Cold Spark over at Tai Happy. That's the first of the GPRE run events, so expect... A little bit unsupported, field positions, a little bit of prone, should be a real good match. I might even run my speed gun over there. I'm not sure. After that, we've got Speed versus Precision in Taranaki. So in Tarata, the famous Tarata venue, held shit, probably nearly as many precision rifle events as your property has over the years. After that,
1,000 people through now.
Shit, yeah. Then we'll most likely be heading back to your place, Mark, Barren Earth.
Woohoo.
So range 7. So again, we shot that for the first time publicly last year. Pretty cool range. There's just some pesky pine trees in the way we have to trim. And then that same day, so this will likely be the end of July, that same day we will head up to the top of Mark's property at RTD around the hay paddocks, and we're going to shoot a night match that night. So it'll be a separate round, just held on the same day. So you'll be able to come down and shoot Barren Earth, which, to be honest, probably won't be that barren anymore because it had a year of growth. And then that night we'll shoot Darkspark, so that'll be a night match. Mostly illuminated targets, no white lights allowed, so red lights only, a few things like that, which we'll finalise in the coming month. And if you wanted to run your thermals or nods or any of that cool stuff, you're more than welcome. After that, sort of August, September time, probably August, we're going to be heading to Whanganui at a new property down there. More to come on that later. And then be back to Port Waikato for run and gun. And then the final, which will be around November, will be back at Pew Pew. And yeah, so it's a 9 rounds in total, including the final, and then obviously the 2 in 1 day. So there's plenty of chances to get your points. We even had a couple of our Hunter Class competitors talk about trying to get their Hunter Class points early in the season, and then they want to shoot the rest of the season in Rifleman and then jump back into Hunter towards the end of the year just to, if they get their appropriate points, which nothing to say, you can't do that. So
then what do you do in the final?
I imagine they'll shoot Hunter Class.
Oh.
Albeit like Ryan, who won Hunter Class this year, he ended up, what, 4th equal and at Pew Pew and Rifleman. Like he went shit hot, actually. He was good. So there's nothing to say you can't develop your skills in Hunter and then move into Rifleman and do well. So it's just littler targets, more distance, and a lot of, you know, the top 15 odd guys are pretty solid. So can't be easy to.
Shout out to the series champion who won a match for the first time.
Yes, to the main.
however that works.
Yeah, the ginger chinchilla himself. Great work. Probably the nicest guy in the whole sport, to be honest. So
yeah,
great work to Nick for taking out the PTN practical. And I'd say, Mark, that about wraps up the episode 85 of the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Thanks again to the Gun Rack for being the podcast sponsor. Me and Mark just got our brand new LDVs turned up. I got a minivan. He got a ute. It's pretty awesome. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you all later.
Mine's a tuk-tuk.